James Packer's Crown Resorts is a behemoth. Its influence stretches across both major Australian political parties and into the pockets of some of the most powerful people in the world. A major investigation by The Age, The Sydney Morning Herald and 60 Minutes has this week exposed Crown involvement in money laundering, facilitation of Chinese espionage, links to people traffickers and prostitution, and failures in Crown's corporate governance. It also exposed an interconnected network of links to underworld figures and serious criminal enterprises. As the story makes its way to Canberra, the scandals at Australia's biggest casino operator provided plenty of material for questions in Parliament. But only two came, both from the Greens. Now with the Integrity Watchdog being ordered to investigate allegations surrounding Crown, where is this story going? And what remaining allegations have yet to surface? I'm Tori Maguire. This is Please Explain. This week, will Crown continue to roll the dice and what comes next? Joining me this week on Please Explain is Nick McKenzie and Grace Tobin. Nick is the Deputy Investigations Editor at The Age and one of the most decorated journalists in the country. Grace is an author and producer with Nine's flagship current affairs program, 60 Minutes. For months, they've been putting together this story. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Apologies to listeners this morning for the state of my voice. I promised Mum that I feel better than I sound. Nick, you're also a bit under the weather, but we shall plough on. This is only a half-hour podcast, not a four-hour podcast, so we're not actually going to be able to go through all of the allegations that you have reported over the last 4 or 5 days because it is just a staggering amount of information. Can you, though, Nick, give me the top line of what your stories have accused Crown of doing?
Well, the stories essentially look at Crown as a listed major corporate entity with major responsibilities to the community and revealed that it is enabling or facilitating recklessly, willfully or otherwise significant serious organised crime that's posing a grave risk to our community and, more seriously, those involved in potentially the covert and insidious work of the Chinese government's interference, influence, operations or agencies in Australia, or at its worst, actual espionage type work. So the immediate thing that listeners will be wondering is, well, how does a casino company facilitate that sort of behaviour? Which is where the story goes down this really quite fascinating path of huge amounts of money and very interesting people coming out of China into Australia. Sometimes, sure, just to gamble. But what we focused on were those coming out to Australia, not just to gamble in the high roller rooms, not just to work with Crown, sometimes as Crown contractors, but also to engage in serious organised crime, drug trafficking, money laundering, and to work in Chinese Communist Party influence operations in Australia. That was a long one line, wasn't it?
Oh, but it's, you know, it's just the tip of the iceberg of what we're talking about. Let's break it down a little bit. We knew already that staff members of Crown had been convicted in China of breaking Chinese laws against promoting gambling in China, but we'd never heard from any of those people, had we? Your story
right, yeah.
Included a woman called Jenny Jiang who worked for Crown and was arrested and served. She was in jail for weeks,
she
wasn't
was,
she?
For a month, and she was given a criminal conviction because she wasn't too high up the food chain there, the Crown food chain in China. She avoided a longer jail sentence. I think when people see a whistleblower on the telly or in the paper, they sometimes forget how brave that person is. To speak out in China about anything is extremely difficult. She took a huge risk in talking out about this very sensitive topic, this topic of a major Australian company breaking Chinese gambling law. Now, we all know about, and we have a vibe that Crown got into trouble in China in 2016, that people were arrested. But I think Crown's been very, very good at not getting into the details of actually what went wrong in China. And that's what Jenny did. She said, this is what was happening on the ground. This is what I saw. This is what I heard. And this is how egregious Crown's actions were on the ground in China, breaking Chinese law. But it's not just about Chinese law. If Crown is breaking Chinese law, and they were, the courts found that, and Jenny certainly said this, that that's what was happening, it also means more than likely they were facilitating the movement of dirty money, the proceeds of crime, or money that's breaching Chinese anti-capital flight laws out of China. So bringing dirty money into Australia and bringing people involved in that sort of activity are likely to be involved in criminal activities themselves. They're coming to Australia. What are they doing here? Which, of course, is the way our story then got stuck into that. What are these people doing here on the ground?
One of the things that I found shocking about Jenny's story, and you might have something to say about this, Grace, was that Crown, the people that she was working with, knew that they were taking incredible risks and even instructed the staff about how to mitigate that risk. Like, they were told, weren't they, what to do in the event that they were arrested.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about that as well, though, is Jenny, you know, she was sort of the keeper of secrets, I suppose. She was an administrator for Crown, so she wasn't involved herself in selling Crown's product there and promoting gambling. But she saw what was happening. She was certainly worried for her welfare and the other staff. I think, you know, they were all walking this fine line of not really understanding at times the risks that they were taking and what could happen to them. Then the Korean staff were arrested and charged in China, and I think that was a huge red flag for these staff, including Jenny. But what's interesting is that even at that point, when they went to managers who were, you know, based back here in Australia and said, we're worried about the same thing happening to us, they were told that they weren't doing anything illegal and just to continue business as usual. So I think in that way, Crown, from a, you know, people perspective, its own staff, you know, they really put those employees at risk.
What are they saying about it now, Crown, about your accusations?
Well, they're saying very, very little. I mean, we've written thousands of words, and there's been lots of people out in federal parliament, in state parliament, across the community saying, well, what is the extent of Crown's knowledge of this bad behaviour? What is the extent of Crown's sort of actual involvement in this bad behaviour? And Crown's, I think we could probably say, count on two hands the amount of sentences it's released over the last 5 days in relation to this scandal. If Crown was serious about taking its corporate governance responsibilities seriously and informing the market as it should as a listed entity about the fact that it does take these things seriously, what they would be doing is employing a former judge or a top expert, a QC who understands money laundering, understands crime, understands corporate governance, to ask the question and release a report about what went wrong inside Crown and how they won't do it again. At the moment, as a shareholder of Crown, you would have no faith that the company has the ability to learn from these mistakes, because certainly what they're telling their shareholders is our policies and procedures are fine. This is all a bit of a circus. We don't know what's, you know, we're going to essentially ignore the public debate and the media revelations and hope it all goes away. That seems to be their plan at the moment. I can tell you that plan will not work, because there is strong evidence and strong intelligence, which we'll keep putting out into the public domain, about this company's negligence or misconduct, and that's not going to go away.
Okay, so Jenny's story in itself would have been a big enough revelation about Crown, but she was really turned out to be quite just one tiny part of the evidence that you got on this story, didn't you? What's the rest of the story based on?
So there's many threads to this story. I mean, Jenny's incredibly important because she's the beating heart, and it's something that Grace and 60 Minutes and before that Four Corners has taught me, you know, the best stories are human stories. So without her, I think it would have been a difficult story in some respects to follow. But the rest of the story, lots of it relies on a huge amount of data we've got from Crown Casino itself. We were leaked.
So these are internal documents.
Internal files, internal emails, internal spreadsheets. And we've got visibility over all their major gamblers in China. And there's, you know, more on this to come. You know, what they were spending at Crown, how they were coming to Australia, how their passage to Australia was being facilitated, how the money was moving out of China. All that information we then overlaid over a whole range of different sources, some which I can't go into, some were public, public information sources, so Chinese court files, Australian court files, business records, regulatory documents, a whole range of bits and pieces that we could find through open source networks, and then looking through human source networks, I'll call them, sort of our confidential informants across government in the region. We were you know, dealing with say ex-police, senior police in Hong Kong, for instance, who gave us some absolutely critical insights, and then comparing that against the Crown data, comparing that against Jenny's views of what the company was up to. I'll tell you what's happening now. Lots of people from inside Crown are reaching out, which is extraordinary, with very, very interesting stories. It's our job to corroborate those. sometimes you see this, you open the tap and you think it's going to be turned off, you know, a day or two later. In this case, you know, the tap's now flooding, I think. And so
the fire hose. As I said before at the start, the number of stories in this package are huge. So for the listeners who want to actually go and read them all, it's best to go to the Herald and the Age website and look for the tag Crown Unmasked. And we've collected all of them together in one spot. But let's talk about money laundering for a minute. The documents described how money was laundered through Crown. How does one do that? If one wanted to launder one's money through Crown, what would one do?
Well, it's in the most visceral and simple example is one we showed. And you know, seeing is believing. And so Crown licenses what they call junket operators. These are businesses. You can think of them as travel agents for the wealthiest gamblers in the world, but they're not just travel agents. They provide these people with lines of credit, with lots of the perks of coming to Australia. They arrange them visas. Sometimes they arrange them prostitutes, all that sort of thing. One of these licensed junket operators, so these are effectively contractors for Crown. Crown licenses them and pays them huge amounts of money to do this job. One of the guys we focused on was at the same time working for Crown, working for an international criminal syndicate, a notorious criminal syndicate called The Company. It's imported more drugs into Australia over the last 30 years than perhaps any other drug trafficking syndicate in the world.
And is that something that people could find out just by Googling? No.
I mean, and you know, there's lots more to say. The Company is a whole other story in and of itself, and we'll get to that, I think, in due course. But The Company effectively was paying this Crown licensed junket operator to launder its money. It was giving him bags of cash, drug money. So they'll import the drugs, they'll sell the drugs on the streets of Melbourne and Sydney. They need to clean the proceeds of that money or get it offshore. They give it to him sometimes in plastic bags. He would literally wander into Crown because he's a known entity, because he's a licensed junket operator. He's a contractor of Crown, effectively. He can go using the Crown, his accounts at Crown, passes the money over to the Crown cashier or banking type person, who then would shift that money or transfer that money to Hong Kong. Now, on the Hong Kong end, one of the key members of the company is waiting for that cash. Grabs the cash.
And from where? Another casino? Or from a wire transfer shop?
Sometimes a small wire transfer shop in Hong Kong or the back blocks of Guangdong. In some respects, it's extremely sort of grubby trade being done in tiny money remitters in Hong Kong. But then you think about the huge amounts of money that are passing through these channels. And the fact that these guys, I mean, they call it a company because it is effectively an international business type operation that makes multi-billions of dollars every year transporting drugs in and out of Australia and elsewhere. Now, how do they get the money out of Australia, the proceeds of their crime? Crown Casino has been a key part of that.
And I think that one of the things, one of the moments, I suppose, of the 60-minute story in a way was really that CCTV vision. I think sometimes when we talk about money laundering and how does that work and you sort of lose the thought track of what does that actually look like.
It's hard to understand for those of us who've never engaged in it.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the great things about the story is that you could visually actually see how it happened, and it was quite literally, this guy Roy Mu, who worked for Crown and the drug syndicate at the same time, picking up a bag of, I think it was $191,000 in cold hard cash from a greengrocer in suburban Melbourne from one of the other drug company employees, and then taking that to Crown and quite literally just handing it over to the cashier. And to see that amount of money going over the table in Crown Casino and for no one to bat an eyelid and think that something dodgy was going on, I think really speaks for itself.
What are Crown... Does Crown have similar kind of reporting responsibilities to AUSTRAC that the banks would have on suspected money laundering? And
so Crown has certainly reporting obligations under anti-money laundering laws, absolutely. They are, as I understand it, somewhat less than the banks. It's a different environment that the Crown works in than our banks. But anybody who knows anything about money laundering and anyone who works in our federal agencies who work on this say effectively Crown is operating as an underground bank. Sometimes it's doing that with other casinos around the world. Sometimes it's doing that in a way that it makes it very, very hard for investigators to follow money. Now, Crown's response to this is always and remains to this day, every amount over $10,000 that we receive or transact, we report to AUSTRAC, the anti-money laundering agency, which in principle sounds pretty good. But if you're a casino, the amount of $10,000 transactions you are reporting, you know, there's hundreds of thousands every year. So really, it's almost, if you wanted to hide corruption and criminality, you'd be hoping the casino would be reporting everything because you'd be lost in that mess.
Hide it in plain sight.
What we've seen and what we'll yet reveal, but there's plenty more to come. There is evidence that Crown has not been following its proper obligations and reporting suspicious transactions from its casinos. And these are transactions which we think are linked to drug trafficking syndicates. And these are transactions which should have been reported. And I think the failure to report them will lead to some significant issues for Crown down the track.
Mm. One other allegation that I just wanted to get to is the human trafficking. So Crown were in bed with a pretty dirty bloke who owns a brothel just down the road, weren't they?
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Well, yes, still to our knowledge. It's a brothel that's, you know, walking distance from Crown Casino in Melbourne. And what's interesting about it is the alleged human trafficking that went on is quite publicly available information. It'll come up in a Google search if you Google 39 Tope Street, I think is where the brothel is. It doesn't take much to find out about what's been going on in this brothel. The Australian Federal Police, their interest in the owner and the people who've been working for him. I think he was a really good example of the connections that Crown has had. He's a licensed junket operator as well. And, you know, they don't seem fazed by it at all.
Google, it's called Google, you know. I don't want to sound crude, but some of this stuff can be found by Googling. Now, if anyone, any of your listeners or our listeners who have a business know that if they have a business partner, they'll probably want to, or an employee, they'll probably want to Google their name to figure out if they've been in any trouble in the past. If you're a casino, you might want to check some court files and do some proper due diligence. That's what we did to find out many of these things that we found out. Now, Crown either did not do that and should have, and if it did not do that, it's absolutely culpable, or it did do that and didn't care. It's one or the other.
Mm. Okay, we're going to take a short break and we'll come back and talk about how this story unfolded.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davies, editor of the Sydney Morning Herald. The Herald and Age newsrooms are home to some of the country's most experienced journalists, delivering trusted news and analysis every day. But we can't do it without you. Our subscribers get unlimited access to our award-winning independent journalism, plus exclusive behind-the-scenes stories you can't get anywhere else. Subscribe today and support news you can trust.
Okay, welcome back. I'm here with Nick McKenzie and Grace Tobin. I want to talk to you about how you actually did this story. Nick, when did you start working on it?
I mean, it really started back in, for me, in 2017. I think it was late 2017. And I learned of a report that was being done by a number of law enforcement agencies. Someone sort of whispered it to me, didn't give me too many details, but said to me, listen, this report will be damning, and we think Crown's business partners and Crown perhaps itself, maybe unwittingly, is flying in some of the biggest gangsters in the world on private jets to gamble, but these guys are money laundering and they're up to no good. And I FOI'd that some months later and sort of fought through that government FOI process to try to get that report, and was ultimately blocked, I think, about a year ago. But just knowing that was there and knowing that the findings were damning, while I didn't have that report itself, I just started to look under rocks. Yeah, and make calls and speak to people of across all my different networks and business and government, etc. Luckily for me, this is probably the best time in almost 20 years of being a journalist where the stars align. And suddenly someone's telling me, I actually worked on this sort of thing over here, and someone saying I worked in the casino and this is what I saw, and a business person saying I was a business partner of this junket and this is what he was up to. And then suddenly got to meet Jenny Jang, the whistleblower. Critical to all this, though, of course, was an anonymous source, a confidential source, giving us this data from inside Crown. For the first time, we could lift up the bonnet of the Crown Casino, of Crown Resorts, and see how their most secretive high-roll operation worked. And I think people have sort of missed that because the data is pretty dense.
How much of it was there? Like, how many documents are we talking?
There's tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of them. I mean, lots of spreadsheets, financial analysis, lots of emails, and, you know, it is looking for needles in haystacks.
Yeah, where do you even start? Like, okay, practical question. Did they arrive on a memory stick or in a pile?
They arrived on a hard drive,
right.
And I've had some experience doing this before with another project, and it brings to mind an Italian journalist who's a friend of mine once said to me, Nick, you know, getting a million documents is like getting no documents at all. You know, you'd rather not have it. What do you do with it? But there's great data mining tools now, and I'm hopeless on computers, but I sort of figured out sort of how to use this program called Intella. You upload the data into Intella, and then I just basically use key searches. So I began to know who's who in the zoo. So right. Tom Jow, Interpol fugitive, international criminal suspect, notorious alleged organized crime figure, Crown business partner, and Chinese Communist Party influence agent. What do the emails say about him? And sure enough, suddenly I've got these emails where Crown staff are saying, well, Tom Jow wants his mate so-and-so to come to the country. Can we get him a visa? Yes. Now, that email alone, you think, well, there's not much to it. But when you overlay on that the fact that Tom Jow is a major criminal figure, well, hang on, why is Crown getting his mate's visas? And then sort of that you're off on this data trail, and then you begin to look at the money flowing into Tom Jow's business from Crown Casino. You know, I remember seeing one email showing a tax receipt to one of Tom Jow's underlings of $28 million. One bloke out of many who are working for Tom Jow for Crown Casino getting paid by Crown $28 million. Just one guy in a financial year.
The money is just, it's hard to fathom, isn't it?
Mind-blowing.
So when did you realise you needed some help? Because you had some help from other journos on this, didn't you? Just to comb the documents.
Well, yeah, it's from day dot basically, and having Grace and Nick Toscano and then support staff around us as well. And part of the tricky, so I'm right deep in the weeds, and you know, like all obsessive investigative reporters, you get lost down there in the detail, and people think you end up not being able to clearly describe what you're...
Give us the elevator pitch, Nick.
That's right. But then, so in the brilliance of, I think, of television and Grace Tobin and Nick, they come in with fresh eyes 6 months after I've started digging, and they say, well, what does this all mean? Well, show me this. And then they're off looking at the data themselves and drawing their own conclusions with those fresh eyes. And from that, the trick to this as well is making a hugely complicated mess of information and allegations a story, a narrative that people can follow.
You need a top to it, don't you? Like, what's the point? Grace, I wanted to ask you about the challenge. Like, the stories that we've run in the newspapers and online, we must be up to many tens of thousands of words now on those stories. What's the challenge of turning that into one episode of 60 Minutes? How do you take something so complicated?
Yeah, it's...
And make it digestible and interesting.
I think, you know, it was a big challenge from the outset. I remember the first conversation that Nick and I had about it, and it was, you know, a sort of, well, what do you have and what's the story? And much like Nick described, he was pretty deep in it at that stage. So I'm trying to decipher, you know, what have we got and how do we put it on the telly. And I think, you know, the two things that stood out to me was obviously Jenny, because I think, you know, from a 60 Minutes perspective, we have a saying at the show that we try and stick by, which is, you know, when everyone else is covering the flood, we go and interview Noah. So I think that is sort of something that we try and do in our stories. You try and find someone who can sort of tell it through their eyes. And Jenny, for me, certainly was that person from the start.
Appearance was so powerful, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, and she just gave that human insight, her experience through prison and what she went through leading up to it. I knew that we already had a strong story there, as you said earlier. You know, you'd think that was almost enough in many circumstances when you're telling a story like this. But then to know that there was all this data as well, and once I started sifting through that alongside Nick, you know, that was telling its own story. I think the challenge, though, was trying to fit all of that together in one big jigsaw, and it was going to be, you know, 45 minutes worth of content on TV with ad breaks and trying to make sure that people stay across and watch the whole thing, because we had so many revelations throughout that time, and keep it visually interesting the whole way through. So I think it helped that we had, you know, we had really strong players involved in the story who gave great interviews, insights into the Macau and
Hong
Kong.
And you went to Macau, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. We really had to go over there, I think, for interviews, but also to get that sort of sense of what is the gambling industry like in Macau, how do the junkets work, what does it look like when gamblers go there from China and take their money across. So I think that they were all really important elements to keep people watching.
Was it hard to convince Jenny to go on camera?
It was very hard, and it took a long time. And she was scared and remains scared, as I would be if I was her.
It's now, as we're recording, about 3.5 days since the episode went to air. Is she? Have there been any consequences for her so far?
Listen, she's sitting tight. She did not criticise the Chinese government or the Chinese Communist Party. She did not criticise or talk about any organised crime syndicates. I don't know whether she has any views on those things. She certainly wouldn't tell me, and people in China don't speak about those things, and she didn't. She spoke about Crown Casino and its operations. It's what she said were clearly illegal operations in China. But nevertheless, yeah, it is a huge call for her to have done. I think it shows immense bravery. You know, it annoys the hell out of me that when there's a story that catches a bit of fire, it's always journos talking about it, but it wouldn't happen. The real heroes of our work are the whistleblowers always. And she's, they get nothing for doing this. They get, they just get bad fallout, and they often get shocking consequences in terms of future employment in places where governments are authoritarian. There can be other terrible consequences. Just talking very generally and broadly there. Without them, the stories can't be told. They can't be told with meaning and emotion. They can't be told in a way where our audience really connects.
I think what's so impressive about Jenny as well, and you know, it really shows her character when you learn that, you know, she was offered this settlement deal from Crown upon release from prison, and you know, that wasn't it wasn't a huge amount, but it also wasn't. You know, it wasn't anything to sort of throw away, particularly with what she had been through. But she turned that down because of the confidentiality clause in there.
So that she could speak out.
So that she could one day speak out. And it's, you know, 18 months passed since she walked out of prison, and she's sort of held those secrets close to her for that time. But, you know, it's so impressive for her to sit there and speak about it, and to be the only one who's stepped forward and spoken about it, and to think now that she's really opened the floodgates is so impressive.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks very much. I look forward to seeing what's coming next.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Nick McKenzie is the Deputy Investigations Editor at The Age, and Grace Tobin is an author and producer with 60 Minutes. Thanks to our Please Explain guests this week, Nick McKenzie and Grace Tobin. As always, keep your topic suggestions coming through to the team via email. The address is in the show notes. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Subscriptions power our newsrooms. To support independent journalism, search Subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. This week's episode was produced and edited by David Escort and Nicole Priestell, with recordings by David McMillan. Amelia Maguire manages our logistics, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.